This program originally aired May 17th, 2010.
Welcome back. Remember, if you bought a house anywhere but Santa Barbara, you didn't pay enough. Joining me for this segment, Dan Walters, Sacramento Bee columnist, featured throughout California, regularly printed in the Santa Barbara News Press. Welcome back to Radio Real Estate, Dan Walters.
Thank you.
I was going to say you appear regularly in the Santa Barbara News Press, but that sounded like a commercial for some kind of stomach ailment. I missed you at UCSB. UCSB Economic Forecast, I unbelievably promoted it and had sponsored it and actually didn't go. How did that work out for you?
Well, it's always interesting, you know. I do it every year for many, many years, and it works out. That venue is great, the new theater there. They seem to get bigger crowds every year because I got a bigger venue, I guess.
At the Granada Theater.
Yeah.
And you are always the first speaker, and people love coming to hear you speak. And you stand there without a note or reference notes, and you just do it all from memory. How do you plan for something like that?
I never plan. I just walk up and start talking.
Well, you came to the right venue right now, because that's my motto is, I don't know where we're going, but we're making good time, as the pilot said to the co-pilot.
That's right.
So I read your column in Saturday. It was printed here, Saturday, May 15th, 2010, in the Santa Barbara News Press. California cronyism is alive and well, and very interesting. And then, of course, I got down to your reference to the city of Downey that's pushing a bill that would exempt it from environmental laws and to prove for expansion and all this. So what's going on, and what do you think about it?
What's really going on here is that back in the 1990s, the legislature started to tighten up on redevelopment law, believing probably accurately that local communities were using redevelopment law as just basically a subterfuge to funnel subsidies to developers for auto malls and whatnot. And in the process, then being able to grab the property taxes off these redevelopment areas. It's a very complicated thing. You have redevelopment law that goes back to the 1950s. You have Proposition 13 that came along in 1978 that limits property taxes. Then you have Proposition 98 that came along in 1988 that says that basically sets the level of financing for schools. That the net result of all of this is that local governments in California take about $5.5 billion a year off the top of the property tax pot. It's 10%, 12, 10 or 12% of the entire pot, and they can hold on to those taxes, and the rest of the pot then is distributed, is divided among cities and counties and special districts and schools and whatnot. And the net result is that because of that $5.5 billion that's taken off the top, the state treasury is on the hook for about $2.7 billion a year that they have to give to schools to make up for the property taxes that they're not getting from these redevelopment areas. That's the genesis of the state's grabbing $2 billion worth of redevelopment funds to try to balance its own budget. In the meantime, the state tightened up on redevelopment law back in the 90s and basically said you can't have these projects that go on forever and ever and ever because they're supposed to fix a problem. If you don't fix the problem, you either got to fix the problem or end the project. And so these cities were going on. These were going on for decades and decades and decades and decades, kind of a perpetual motion machine. So they said, no, if you want to continue having a redevelopment area or expand a redevelopment area or extend its time, you have to prove the existence of blight, B-L-I-G-H-T, blight, which is what you think of as slums or something like that, or some blighted thing.
Right.
And one city, one famously declared an area they wanted to make an auto mall into as blighted because it was subject to periodic flooding. Yes, it was subject to periodic flooding because it was a marsh, but they declared that to be blight. And so this was the sort of thing.
Are you talking about New London, Connecticut?
No, I'm actually talking about Fairfield, California.
Oh.
And so the legislature tightened up and said, no, you got to prove blight. You just can't declare blight. You have to actually prove that it exists. And cities, a lot of them don't like this because they want to extend these redevelopment areas because they can skim off the top of this property tax pot. And so there's been all sorts of efforts in the legislature to loosen the law back up. Well, along comes Downey, and there's a proposal to build this electric car plant in Downey, Tesla Motors. So Downey is running this bill to say, well, it doesn't have to prove blight in this redevelopment area. He wants to use the redevelopment to subsidize, to give money to the developer of this auto plant. But it's not a blighted area. So what they have in this bill is just, it merely declares this area to be blighted, even though it's not blighted, so that it can qualify for redevelopment status, and the city can skim off the property taxes and give subsidies to the developer of this Tesla Motors plant. And my attitude is that this is a continuation of a developing theme in California of crony capitalism, that California has a tremendous amount of red tape, very difficult to get development permits to do this, that, and the other. But if you can pull the right levers and get the right special exemption bill, you can kind of rise above the thing. Everybody else has to follow these laws, but you can get an exemption. And the one example that occurred last year, a big example, was the City of Industry getting a total exemption from state environmental law so that they could build a football stadium. A man comes down and he says, we wanted an exemption from all these laws, the redevelopment law, CEQA, all these things, so we can build an electric car plant. When you start down that path, then everybody else is going to line up and say, well, I want a special exemption, too. I don't want to have to follow these laws involving blight or environmental quality or any of this kind of stuff. And so you see then this kind of developing syndrome in California politics of crony capitalism that starts operating like Russia, where everybody, you know, you get all these, everybody gets a special deal if you, you know, push the right levers, push the right button, pull the right levers, political levers, and so forth. And
that's what you end up on top. They 60 Minutes highlighted the richest man in Russia that wants to actually, I think he just bought the New Jersey Nets. And he basically acknowledged that that's how he made his money. It was just, you know, all these backroom
deals.
That's
the way Russia works.
Yeah.
And the question is, do we want California to work that way? And I don't think we really do.
And Schwarzenegger's actually pushing for this somewhere in your column?
No, Schwarzenegger's not pushing for that. Schwarzenegger has his own version of it, which is that he and his successor governors could designate up to 100 projects to be exempt from all environmental laws. And they would choose the project, whatever they wanted to pick. That's just an invitation to that sort of thing.
Right. So, in other words, he's saying that maybe the cities aren't well qualified enough to be the ultimate decider of what's going to happen. So
well,
he wants the governor.
It's not just the cities that are involved. I mean, there's state, federal, and local regulations. And basically, a governor could choose 100 projects and say, you're exempt. You can do it. You don't have to follow the laws that everybody else has to follow.
And we're talking with Dan Walters, Sacramento Bee columnist, featured in the Santa Barbara News Press several times a week. So you think this is a slippery slope. You don't think it's a good idea.
It is a slippery slope, and it's not a good idea. If the CEQA or the redevelopment laws or any of these other things need to be modified, then they should modify them. But I call it the dark side of liberal government. Liberal government is supposed to have all these protections in place to protect the health, welfare, and so forth to the public. And the dark side of that, the Coastal Commission being, by the way, a very good example, the dark side of that is that when you create this regulatory thicket, then you create a trade in getting exemptions from that regulatory thicket. And again, the Coastal Commission is a good example. Every project along the coast has to go through the Coastal Commission. And there's a whole coterie of lobbyists who do nothing but get projects approved by the Coastal Commission. So not too many years ago, there was a scandal in which one of the Coastal Commissioners was basically selling project approvals. And this is when you start getting regulation that is so dense to navigate, then you create a trade in getting exemptions from that, special exemptions. And that's crony capitalism.
Yeah, I remember hearing a lot of things related to the California Coastal Commission where projects have come through. And, for example, even though there might not be a law against cutting down oak trees, if they see you have a bunch of oak trees, they'll horse trade and say, well, you know, you can have the project, but you can't do this. Or I don't know if that's a really good example of what you just said, but it just came to mind.
Well, it's more an example of the person who works out the deal on oak trees. In other words, they go in and you get a special deal of some kind. So you're creating a trade then in political favors because of the regulatory. Let me give you another example. California law, believe it or not, dictates which breed of horse can race at which track on which day, 365 days a year. That's in California law. not regulation, but law. So if you want to deviate from that, you want to race Appaloosas rather than quarter horses or something like that, you've got to actually come and get a change in the law. And so you have this constant commerce, this trade in special favors. Same thing with liquor laws. The California law says if you're engaged in one side of the liquor trade, say you're a wholesaler or you're a winemaker or you're a retailer, you cannot engage in another part of the thing. You cannot be a retailer and a winemaker at the same time, according to California law. So what happens is every year the legislature goes through a whole bunch of bills exempting specific deals, specific wineries or specific distributors or specific retailers from that law. It came up in the case of the Staples Centers, for example, where somebody who owned Staples Center also owned a brewery or something, and so they had to come and get a special exemption in the law to be able to sell liquor. Well, that just creates more commerce, more exemptions, rather than changing the law and making it a rational law. You create the impetus, the reason for people to hire lobbyists, give campaign contributions, and come across the palms of politicians. You are creating corruption by this regulatory thicket.
And you think that the laws could be modified to the point where it would be a little more clear-cut?
I think if the law is not appropriately used, then it should be changed. You shouldn't just get an exemption from it. You should change the law so that everybody has the same chance, and you don't have to hire a lobbyist, give campaign contributions, and go out and get a special exemption just for yourself.
I think what comes to mind for me is when you touched on blight and redevelopment and real estate and eminent domain, and where people have worked their whole lives. It's not necessarily some nameless, faceless corporation, but it could be a mom and a pop who just built some real estate little business, small time, and then they face getting it taken away because maybe, for the good of the community, or maybe it does make sense and there's an argument, but I think it's just such a difficult, as we said, a slippery slope. Talking with Dan Walters, Sacramento columnist, Sacramento Bee, I should say, and appearing in the Santa Barbara News Press. You mentioned the racetrack. I went to the racetrack for the first time, and I wonder if this is one of these laws that they got around. What's the racetrack? How many racetracks do we have in Los Angeles? That's 2 hours from Santa Barbara.
Santa Anita and Hollywood Park.
I think it was...
Santa Anita's up near Pasadena and Hollywood Park.
Oh, Santa Anita.
LA Airport.
Thank you. Santa Anita. Although I'm a little shocked that you specifically know where they are located, and you're that far away, so you clearly have a gambling problem.
No, I clearly keep track of what these people do in the legislature.
So I went to Santa Anita for the first time in my life. I went to a racetrack, and it was a lot of fun. And it's open like this giant bar. It was open on one side, and people were smoking cigarettes all over. And I just thought, and so what? Do you know anything? What's their exemption? I mean, it didn't bother me.
I have no idea. That one I'm not familiar with. All I know is that every phase of the racehorse business is a matter of state law. Which horses can race, which days, how the purses are divided, how the gambling money is divided up among various things. There's even a thing called breakage, wherein bets don't always come out even, to the dime.
Mm-hmm.
There's odd cents. So there's these pennies accumulate, and there were big fights in the legislature over who gets the pennies and things like that. I mean, every aspect of horse racing is regulated by state law, and the result of it, ironically enough, has been to drive horse racing into the ground. Horse racing is a dying thing in California, and it's because it's become so regulated, so monopolistic, and there's no competition, there's no fresh air or anything in it. It's regulating itself into the obscurity, basically.
And under the guise that they're trying to protect the
consumer.
Somebody.
Well, actually, what they're trying to protect is people's monopolies. They don't want to compete, so they try to divide up the races and the horses and the breeds and all this kind of stuff by law, so that they don't have to compete with one another.
Well, yeah, I thought that's what a race was, competing. That's kind of funny.
The horses compete, but the tracks don't want to compete.
Unbelievable. I thought it was actually pretty interesting to see the cigarette smoking going on, you know, at the bar and all, and it kind of just threw me. I mean, that's the way I grew up. And there was plenty of fresh air to get away from it, so it didn't really bother me. But I'd really be curious to know. It must be part of some kind of regulation, somehow, some exemption. And it seemed to fit, because every movie I ever saw was... in fact, I wanted to buy me and Frank a cigar while I was there, but they were like $15 each. And I thought, well, I'm probably only going to take a few puffs and then get sick, so I didn't want to spend $15. But seemed like the thing to do, you know, kind of gamble. Dan Walter, Sacramento Bee, always great to talk to you. Wealth of information. And we'll have you back another time, because you ran through those numbers with the schools and the whole problem with Prop 13, and then Prop 98.
It's a great example of the unintended consequences. Redevelopment law interacting with Proposition 13, then interacting with Proposition 98 to create a situation that nobody foresaw or intended of this thing about the state subsidized local redevelopment projects through giving more schools. The law of unintended consequences.
Dan Walters, thanks so much for appearing.
You're welcome.
Okay, talk to you soon. Dan Walters, Sacramento Bee columnist, appears regularly in the Santa Barbara News Press, as in Metamucil. Mark Schneiman's Radio Real Estate, radiorealestate.com, 452-2428. We'll take a quick break and come back with more stuff.